saddle for one last ride. As the rain pours off his hat, you can see the shadows of the past written in his eyes. Now the cannons are silent, his friends are all gone. Gotta put it all behind him if he ever wants to find his way home. He's the last rebel.
Yes, folks, the last rebel on the road. Welcome, everyone, to Republic Broadcasting Network and Rebel Madman Radio. Here, as we start the second half of the year 2023. And I just wanted to take just a couple of minutes before we jump into today's program and to beseech you, if I may, to do whatever is within your power to help us keep free speech rolling in America, at least on a minuscule scale, because I promise you the powers that be, the international bankers and those who would dominate and control your lives, are not going to be donating to RBN. So it's going to be up to you folks to keep this going, because they, on the other side, put millions upon millions of dollars into promoting a false narrative in America. And it's our job. And it's our job because we owe it to our posterity. We have to keep free speech alive in America. So jump on RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, and find what you can find that might interest you in products, or just hit that old donate button and make sure that you support those advertisers who advertise here at RBN. Well, today is July the 1st. And, of course, we've got July the 4th coming up on Tuesday. And, pardon me. And so I thought, you know, what better to do than, you know, most people spend their days watching sports or, you know, whatever. And the good old TV, the lobotomy box, and they spend quite a bit of time with that. And I realize I'm kind of a weird guy, but I derive a lot more pleasure out of going through boxes of original source documents that are over 230 years old and reading true history, not some history that was made up by some Marxist professor with the PhD piled higher and deeper after his or her name. And they wrote those lies because their institutions were given large grants. And to pay for those large grants, these false narratives are written about history. But I'm going to read to you today something that was published to begin our program, that was published in the Pennsylvania Mercury on the 16th of February in the year of 1788. And I think you're going to find this rather interesting, and I think you will find it apropos for the upcoming Independence Day holiday. And now, after I finish that, I'm going to try to link some things together, you know, three eras. Number one is what we're going through today, and number two will be Reconstruction, during Reconstruction after our Second War for Independence, and then will be the founding era of America. But as usual, being a rebel madman, I'm going to start backwards. Pardon me again. So here is your essay for today from 1788. Friends, countrymen, and fellow citizens, you have fought, you have bled, and you have conquered. You have established your independence, and you ought to be free. But behold, a set of aristocrats, demagogues, conspirators, and tyrants have arisen up and say, you shall be governed. Is this to be endured by free men? Men who have lain in the open air, exposed to cold and hunger, men who have worn out their health and constitutions in marches and countermarches from one end of the continent to the other, and after they have attained that noble prize of freedom for which they contended to the other, and after they have attained, for which they have contended, are they to sit down tamely and be governed? Of what service is a man's liberty to him unless he can do as he pleases? And what man can do as he pleases who lives under a government? The very end of government is to bind men down to certain rules and duties. Therefore, 'tis only fit for slaves and vassals. Every free man ought to govern himself, and then he will be governed most to his own mind. Thus, my friends, you see, all government is tyrannical and oppressive. In the next place, it is insulting. It is as much as to tell us we know not how to take care of ourselves, and therefore we should submit to be directed by our betters, who are appointed as guardians over so many wards. Now, of what use can our reason be to us if after we have come, or ought to have come, to years of discretion, we are still to be led, guided, and bandied about by those who pretend to know better than we? And who, pray, are those who are to be thus led, guided, and bandied about? Why, the people. We the people. Strange that 3 millions of people should be led, guided, and bandied about by 90 or 100 aristocratical, demagogical, tyrannical conspirators. Would it not be more according to order, propriety, and the nature of things that the 90 or 100 conspirators should be led, guided, and bandied about by 3 million people? In the third place, all government is expensive, for these 90 or 100 conspirators will not govern us for nothing. They demand they be paid for it. Think on that, my countrymen. We must not only be governed, but be insulted by being governed. But we must pay these demagogues for coming from all parts of the continent to lay their heads together how to govern us most effectually. For this, we must pay them mileage, pay them wages, fill their purses, supply their tables to keep them in idleness, to riot on the fat of the land, to plot, contrive, and juggle us into good order and government. Now, all this money might be saved to the public by each man governing himself and doing as he pleased, which by nature he has a right to do. Oh, my countrymen, my bowels yearn with affliction when I think to what a pass we are likely to come, when I think, after all we have done and suffered for dear liberty, we must still be kept in order and governed. I had hoped, after our glorious struggle, this country would be an asylum for all those noble, untamed spirits who are desirous of fleeing from all law and government. But alas, after all I have said and written, after all the interventions I have racked my brain for, and horrible descriptions I have laid before you, you are still unaroused, and I have made no impression on any except a few of those choice spirits at Carlisle. And how have these been treated by the conspirators who call themselves Federalists? They have been called insurgents, rioters, and British deserters. True, many of them were deserters, and to their credit be it spoken, they deserted from king and country, friends and relations, wives and children, to come here so they could be free. They expected we were to be a free people, and they have come among us to live at large and do as they please. Think then how disappointed they must be and how peculiarly hard their case is, either to stay here and be governed or to return and be hanged. Rouse then, my friends, my countrymen, my fellow citizens. Rouse, ye Shaites, Deites, and Shattuckites. Ye insurgents, rioters, and deserters. Ye Tories, refugees, and anti-federalists. Rouse, and kick up a dust before it is too late. Be not such a parcel of stupid, dunderheaded, blunderheaded, muddleheaded, puddleheaded blockheads. Such a tribe of sniveling, driveling, sneaking, slinking, moping, poking, mumping, pitiful, pimping, pettifrogging poltrons. Such a set of nincompoops, ninny hammers, mushrooms, jackasses, jackanapses, jackandandies, goose caps, tom noodles, yahoos, shite pokes, and rouse, awaken. Rub your eyes. Do not you see the aristocrats, the monocrats, the demagogues, the pedagogues, the gogmagogues, brobingogs, conspirators, and federal hobgoblins are preparing to govern you, to enslave you, to enthrall you, and bemaul you? If you submit to them, they will rob you of your liberties. They will tie you hand and foot. They will play hob with you, play the Dickens with you, and play the devil with you. They will put halters around your necks and hold your noses to a grindstone. They will purge you and bleed you, glister you and blister you, drench you and vomit you. They will tread on your toes, break your shins, dock your tails, draw your teeth, tear your hair, and scratch out your eyes. They will pull your noses, plug your ears, punch you in the gut, and kick you in the breech. Zounds, will nothing ever rouse you? End of quote. I think that is very appropriate for this time as we look at the 4th of July. Well, one of the reasons, you know, I hadn't originally planned to read that until I found it, and I thought it so apropos. But today I was going to really address, and that fits in with what I just read, fits in with the fact that today we are sitting around and I see what little time I spend looking at, certain things, social media and other things, what little time I spend with that, I notice that now there seems to be a really strong feeling and a wondering about what is about to happen in this country now. What is going to happen financially? What is going to happen to our money? Is our money safe? Is our money secure? What do you think? Do you think it is? Well, let's look back in history, as I said in the very beginning. Let's look back in history and let's look at three periods of time. Now, the one thing we know from the essay I just read, we know unequivocally that there was a group of aristocrats who had decided to take over the country, and they called themselves Federalists. And at the Constitutional Convention, they voted down a Bill of Rights unanimously because they didn't want the people to have any rights. Pardon me. And they didn't want any limitations on their government. And ironically, quite a few of these men who call themselves Federalists were deeply in debt to the government of the United States. And they had acquired this debt through what we could only call embezzlement and what have you, led by the Bank of North America. And then after the war was complete, they took over the Congress under the Articles of Confederation, and they tried everything they could to accomplish their goals of not having to pay back any of the money that they owed, and in fact to switch it the other way and to actually have people, have the taxpayers of America paying them. So, and we look at this and we wonder, you know, well, how did this come about? How do we know these things? Or someone might say to me, hey, Rebel Madman, how do you know this stuff? And it's, well, you know, guys, I've done a lot of research over the years. And here is one of the things we know, and it's documented if you read the letters, because Robert Morris was the head honcho of this massive theft. And he brought in a lot of his buddies, a lot of his fellow Federalists, and he brought them into the game that they were playing during the war. There was all kind of money available, but somehow the troops who were fighting the battles weren't getting the money. Washington's troops rebelled at times because they had no supplies. But yet there were millions of dollars in the hands of these people we call founders and framers who wrote a constitution. And they wrote Article 6, Clause 1, which, you know, so simply stated that the debts owed by the United States were valid. Didn't mention the debts owed to the United States, which many of them were involved in. Now, to go back and to offer a original source document on that, let me jump back to our good friend Samuel Bryan, who wrote as the Anti-Federalist Sentinel. And let's read what he had to say. He said, there are a few of the maxims or opinions we hold that are the result of our own investigation or observation, and even those we adopt from others are seldom on a conviction of their truth or propriety, but from the fascination of example and the influence of what is or appears to be the general sentiment. Boy, did he just describe America today. The science of government, being the most abstruse and unobvious of all others, mankind are more liable to be imposed upon by the artful and designing in systems and regulations of government than on any other subject. Hence, a jealousy of innovation confirmed by uniform experience prevails in most communities. This reluctance to change has been found to be the greatest security of a free government and the principal bulwark of liberty. For the aspiring and ever restless spirit of ambition would otherwise, by her deceptive wiles and ensnaring glosses, triumph over the freest and most enlightened people. It is the peculiar misfortune of the people of these United States at this awful crisis of public affairs to have lost this useful, this absolutely necessary jealousy of innovation in government, and thereby to lie at the mercy and to be exposed to all the artifices of ambition, without this usual shield to protect them from imposition. The conspirators, well aware of their advantage, have seized the favorable moment and by the most unparalleled arts of deception have obtained the sanction of the conventions of several states to the most tyrannic system of government ever projected. That's the government you live under today, folks. Well, the magic of great names, the delusion of falsehood, the suppression of information, precipitation and fraud have been the instruments of this partial success, the pillars whereon the structures of tyranny have been so far raised. Still going on today, folks. Those influential vehicles, the newspapers, with few exceptions, have been devoted to the cause of despotism. Think about mainstream media today, people. And by the subserviency of the post office. The usefulness of the patriotic newspapers has been confined to the places of their publication.
while falsehood and deception have been universal circulation without the opportunity of refutation. The feigned unanimity of one part of America has been represented to produce the acquiescence of another, and so mutually to impose upon the whole by the force of example. The adoption of the new Constitution by the Convention of the State of Massachusetts by a majority of 19 out of near 400 members, and that too qualified by a number of propositions of amendment, cannot afford the conspirators much cause for triumph, and especially when all of the circumstances under which it has been obtained are considered. The late alarming disorders which distracted that state and even threatened the subversion of all order and government and were with difficulty suppressed occasioned the greatest consternation among all men of property and rank. In this disposition, even the most high-toned and arbitrary government became desirable as a security against licentiousness and agrarian laws. Consequently, the new Constitution was embraced with eagerness by men of these descriptions, who in every community form a powerful interest, and added to the conspirators, office hunters, etc., etc., made a formidable and numerous party in favor of the new Constitution. So, folks, that kind of gives us an idea about what was going on back then, but we aren't taught this. No one is told this in our good old 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto education system. And we aren't told this for a reason. There is a reason we don't know this. So those who we call founders and give all of these accolades to and framers were people who owed the U.S. government millions of dollars. Millions of dollars in 1786-87. Millions. Now, how can we, you know, you let people who owe money to the government write the rules of government to draw up a new constitution, and we think that that was inspired by God? You have to be kidding me, people. It's just absolutely unreal. And people will tell you, well, how did you know this? And, you know, we can look at these anti-federalists, which were hidden in American academia for 100 years. Of course, you know, if you hide something for 100 years, you've got three generations of people who aren't going to know a damn thing about it, right? All right, the goal was obtained. But then to go back and to look at one of the anti-federalists, again, Sentinel, he said, a comparison of the authority under which the convention acted, the Articles of Confederation, and their form of government, the Constitution, will show that they have despised their delegated power and assumed sovereignty of which was not theirs, that they have entirely annihilated the old Confederation and the particular governments of the several states, and instead thereof have established one general government, that is to pervade the Union, constituted on the most unequal principles, destitute of accountability to its constituents, and as despotic in its nature as the Venetian aristocracy, government that will give full scope to the magnificent designs of the well-born, a government where tyranny may glut its vengeance on the low-born, unchecked by an enforceable, odious Bill of Rights. Unchecked by a Bill of Rights. Now, yesterday, folks, on the National Intelligence Report, we went into in depth how very recently the courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, have told the states you have no rights. And if the states have no rights, the people have no rights. It's really that simple. So, you know, gosh, guys, it's all about money. It was about money to prepare the Constitution. The thing we call the Civil War was about money. You know, we can say it's about slavery. Yeah, sure, there was slavery. But the war was not fought about slavery because Abraham Lincoln said it wasn't in his first inaugural address. He told the people of the South, I cannot do anything about slavery because it's constitutional. You have the rights to slavery. Here's a new amendment. We'll call it the Corwin Amendment, folks. And you can vote for this and you can have slavery forever. We don't care. But in his first inaugural address, he said, I don't want to have bloodshed, but it will happen if I have to invade the South to collect my tariff. That's not his exact words, but that's what he meant. And he said that in those exact words in other places. So again, it was about money. And today we are living in America and we're asking questions about our money. You know, what's going to happen? Are we going to go to, you know, cryptocurrency? Or, you know, is the dollar going to be declared defunct? People, these criminals act and plan decades ahead. And they hand you something that you think is convenient. And you readily accept it. Oh, isn't this convenient? Isn't this nice? I don't have to get my paycheck at work because the boss is just going to deposit right in my account. So I don't even have to worry about taking it to the bank. I don't have to worry about cashing it. Look how wonderful it is that I can just have all of this, you know, even my government money, if I've got retirement is deposit, direct deposit. If I've got Social Security, it's direct deposit. If I've got all of this, it's direct deposit. Folks, which in the end means the government has your money. And we have gone along with it because it was convenient. Now, once they have your money, they can do whatever they want to. Let's not forget that in 2020, well, actually 2019, there was a move in the U.S. Senate, and they did a study on how they could seize all IRAs and 401ks and to put that money into what would resemble a same thing as Social Security. So they were going. They're talking about taking it. Well, how much money is in our IRAs and 401ks? About $30 trillion. Oh, what? What's the U.S. debt? Oh, about $30 trillion. People, I got a question to ask you. If these demagogues that have been described 200 and some years ago, and they're the same people today, if they can take your money, they'll take it. Unless you're the last rebel on the road. Be back on the flip side, folks. Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names, Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Well, your dadgum government, you sorry so-and-sos. You got your damn hands in every pocket of my clothes. Well, your dadgum, dadgum, dadgum government. Oh, don't you know? Oh, don't you love them sometimes?
Well, isn't it amazing that even the wonderful Roger Miller saw this? And in his song, Government, You Got Your Damn Hands in Every Pocket of My Clothes, you think that's going to stop? No, that is the end goal. And as I was talking about before we came upon the break, you've got, you know, if you've got an IRA, a 401k, if you've got money in a bank, what good is it going to do you if the federal government says, no, we're taking that? And we'll let you have what we think you need down the road because, you know, we are the government and you will follow our orders because we enforce them at the point of a gun. So I just ask you, stop and think about it. Ask yourself this question. You don't have to give me an answer, but ask yourself. If tomorrow, federal government said, oh, well, you know, sorry, things have really turned to crap here, and so we are seizing all of your bank assets, and we will put in place some kind of system to where if you need money for food or if you need money for this, that, or the other, at our approval, we will allow you to have it. But it has to be at our approval. So if you don't pass this social credit score, if you have been a bad boy, if you have said, or girl, if you've said bad things about the government at any time, then we're going to do you just like Abraham Lincoln did the people in the North during the war who opposed his policies. We're going to put your butt in jail, or we're going to ship you out of the country, or, you know, we might even kill you. Now, what control do you actually have over your own money? None. None. And that is why I wanted to bring about an example today, because this is the rebel madman. And I frequently talk about the Wall of Northern Aggression, our second war for independence. I frequently talk about those. And so today I'm going to bring up something along those lines as well that will coordinate with the first part of the founding of this country and will also relate to what is going on today and maybe give you an example of something to look at of what the government has previously done. Now, in this instance, guess what? They did it to black people. You know, those people, they fought a war, killed a million people to make sure that they were free so they could steal their money. Now, has anybody ever told us that? Is that on the Lincoln Memorial? We stole their money. We set them free so we could steal their money. Is that, have you ever heard that part? No, and you won't. But it is in fact true. Now, what I'm going to tell you about today is the Freedman's Savings Bank, which was the very first bank that collected deposits from African Americans following emancipation. And it started in 1865, and of course, a month before he was executed, Lincoln signed it into law at behest of the wonderful radical Republicans, especially none other than Mr. Charles Sumner, Senator Charles Sumner. And so here we have, and so it attracted close to 100,000 depositors across 17 states within a very short period of time. Here's the wonderful, the black folks going, oh, look, this wonderful government has set us free. And now they're going to offer us a way to save our money. They're going to help us. They're going to help us learn how to protect ourselves and to save our money for our own futures. Well, we, on a close examination, you will find that the Freedman's Bank promoted itself in newspapers throughout the South during Reconstruction and in the North more than any other bank in existence. A textual analysis shows that the content of the advertising, which included false promises and a moralizing rhetoric, was also quite unique for the banking industry. This misleading advertising intensified as the fraud accelerated. And it was, the money was used. Oh, we'll get into that. That's going to be even more fun. But anyway, let's look at this. Now, here, the guy who really got hung with this, or hanged with this, if we're going to use the proper words, would have been none other than the great Frederick Douglass. And we're going to go into how he got put on the hook, because the wonderful Jewish white bankers who absconded with all of these people's money decided, what better target can we put up there for the black folks than Frederick Douglass, one of their heroes? So what did Frederick Douglass say about this wonderful Freedman's Bank? Pardon me. He said, and I quote, "This was an institution designed to furnish a place of security and profit for the hard earnings of the colored people, especially of the colored people of the South. There was something missionary in its composition, and it dealt largely in exhortations as well as promises. Circulars, tracts, and other papers were scattered like snowflakes in winter by this benevolent institution among the sable millions, and they were told to look to the Freedman's Bank and live," unquote. A quote directly from Frederick Douglass in 1882. Now, you know, how did this happen? As I told you, it was a deal by none other than Mr. Charles Sumner, Senator Charles Sumner, radical Republican. And then he got, got Abraham Lincoln to sign it into law in March of 1865. And they put it all together. Well, the Freedman's Bank, created in the aftermath of the Civil War, was a nominally benevolent institution. It opened 37 branches across 17 states from 1865 to 1872. Now, the founders of the Freedmen's Bank, now try to find their names, people. Go on the internet, go to Google, go to whatever, try to find the names of the trustees of this bank. Good luck. But they were listed as distinguished white church members, businessmen, reformers, and abolitionists. And they organized the bank with the stated objective of bringing economic independence to the 4 million African Americans who had just been released from slavery. How wonderful. Doesn't the government always tell you all these wonderful things they're going to do to you or do for you, but they end up doing them to you before it's over with? It's just absolutely amazing. So within 7 years, the bank collected close to $100 million in today's money. And these were deposits from around 100,000 African-American individuals, with a branch in almost all of the main cities in the South, as well as strong connections with schools for the freedmen, the federal institutions, and prominent political and military figures of the Civil War and Reconstruction era. The bank was salient to many African Americans. Now, the idea of this first came from two Union generals who were about as incompetent on the battlefield as one could imagine. And one was Nathaniel Banks. And General Nathaniel Banks got his butt kicked up and down the Shenandoah Valley by none other than Stonewall Jackson in 1862. The other one was Benjamin Beast Butler, who was the first person to tell Abraham Lincoln, "Do not let the blacks flee slavery in the South. Make them contraband and put them to work for our efforts." Now, you don't hear that down at your local gulag, do you? But Benjamin Butler then was sent to New Orleans, and he took over, and he was known in New Orleans as General Spoons Butler. Now, he was called Spoons Butler because one of the first things he did when he took command of the Union Army in New Orleans was he sent the Union military around and seized everyone's silver and gold. Oh, those wonderful Yankees. Aren't they just the sweethearts of the world? But, yes, they were the two people who first started these banks, Nathaniel Banks and Benjamin Spoons Butler. Now, Butler also had a problem with the women in New Orleans because those people were Southerners. They weren't Yankees. They did not like their city being taken over by the Union Army and being governed by the military. They didn't like it at all. So many times on the streets of New Orleans, and it's documented, If the women of New Orleans passed a Union soldier, they would turn their backs on them. And then they got a little more hostile. They would take their chamber pots, and on the second floor, when the Union Army members were walking by, these ladies would turn their chamber pots and empty them onto the passing Union soldiers. How appropriate, I think. But anyway, it angered Benjamin Butler to the point that he declared in a special order that all women who acted such would be treated as prostitutes. Now, guess what that meant? That was your wonderful, benevolent Yankee members. But anyway, he started a bank in New Orleans. Nathaniel Banks started a bank where they were taking the blacks' money. But then when the Freedmen's Bank became authorized by Congress in 1865, then their proceeds, what they had, was given over to the Freedmen's Bank. But Mismanagement and fraud led to the collapse of the Freedmen's Savings Bank in 1874. Now, the failure of the bank not only ruined thousands of colored men, but taught even more blacks a lesson of distrust. But, unfortunately, they still trust them, because they have told them, we're going to give you free stuff as long as you hate those white people. We'll give you this, we'll give you that, we'll give you all kind of stuff, free cell phones, free tennis shoes, we'll give you all kind of free stuff. All you have to do is hate those white people. That is the only thing we ask for our free stuff. But let's look back at what W.E.B. Du Bois said about the Freedmen's Bank. He said, and I quote, "Not even 10 additional years of slavery could have done so much to throttle the thrift of the freedmen as the mismanagement and the bankruptcy of the Freedmen's Bank." Now, that is a quote from W.E.B. Du Bois in 1903. Now, how did the bank build legitimacy and trust among these recently freed African Americans while being governed completely and totally by white directors whom no one knew their names? What was the role of advertising? How did this institution subsequently turn into what, and this is wonderful, what Frederick Douglass finally said about the Freedmen's Bank, and I quote, he said, it was the black man's cow, but the white man's milk, unquote. What he meant was it was the white man's Jewish banker's milk. The white people of the South were just as destitute. Frederick Douglass wrote that in 1874. Well, there were 17, let's look at all of the way they went about this. There was 17 digitized newspapers distributed across six of the main states where the bank collected the majority of their deposits. And they were Georgia, New York, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. Well, we look at these newspapers and look at exactly what they were saying to the people. How were they going about that? Well, they advertised extensively and significantly more than any other financial institution. I think I mentioned that previously. But all of the newspapers with an African-American or a general audience covered the Freedmen's Savings Bank. Every issue of the New National Era, the main national newspaper with an African-American audience from 1870 to 1874, carried constant advertisements for the Freedmen's Bank. And they included columns of recommending them. The advertising consistently, when we look at the records, correlates with the collection of new deposits and new depositors. Within a branch area, an increase in the number of publications on the Freedmen's Savings Bank in the local newspapers was always followed by an increase in new accounts. Second, we find in looking at this that the Freedmen's Savings Bank's advertising largely relied on false promises, while the advertising of the other banks were more informational. So they were telling the people and using preachers in this fraud, using them as much as anything else to play upon the feelings of the black people. And the Freedmen's Savings Bank advertising made extensive use of moralizing rhetoric, referring constantly to religion, referring to your duties and your vices, as well as using prominent personalities to promote them. Well, gosh, guys, isn't that the same thing we're seeing today? The New National Era published the following ad every week from June 1871 to July 1873. And here's what it said, and I quote, "Cut off your vices. Don't smoke. Don't drink. Don't buy lottery tickets." Yeah, there were lotteries back then, folks. "Put the money you save from giving up these habits into the Freedmen's Savings Bank. And then to look at another illustration was this, and I quote, "Reasons why you should put all of your money in the savings bank, because being your own masters now, it is your duty to provide for your settlement in life, to provide for the future of your families, for sickness and for old age." God, sounds like the government today. "It teaches you the value of money and prevents you from spending your money foolishly. The Holy Scriptures require you to be saving money." Wonderful advertising, huh? That moralizing rhetoric often reinforced racial stereotypes from this time on the moral habits of African Americans. There was no other bank advertising itself as a component using morality for the reason for saving. That is just what happened here, and we aren't taught this, and you're not going to be taught this. I promise you this. But the misleading advertising at the Freedmen's Savings Bank intensified with the fraudulent use of deposit funds. Oh, wait a minute. The bank did something wrong? Well, yes. In 1870, several years into Reconstruction here, at least three, the charter, the trustees of the bank petitioned the Congress to change their charter, because initially their charter said that they could invest in securities or what have you at the bank, but they couldn't make any loans. So 1870 comes along, they petition the U.S. government, the U.S. Congress, and the Congress changes the guidelines for this wonderful Freedmen's Bank. And now the Freedmen's Bank can make loans. But who do the trustees, who do the white people running this bank, who do they make the loans to? Wasn't to black folks. No, they made loans to each other. Take us back to Robert Morris and the early founders. They made loans to each other with this money. Some of these men who were trustees in the Freedmen's Bank, and you can't find their names, some of them were trustees in other banks, and what they did was they took the bad loans that they had made in the other banks and transferred them to the Freedmen's Bank so that the freedmen would lose their money. And then finally, when they began to see about 1872, that these things were going terribly bad. And, you know, it's like I said, you know, when we look back at the records, that while the depositors were black, 80% of the loan volumes went to white borrowers who were often nothing but members of these trustees' elite aristocratic networks. Almost every loan by this bank violated the criteria for lending in the bank's charter, and over 95% of the loans past due were never paid, suggesting strategic default by the borrowers, which were friends of the trustees. In a difference in differences model, we can document an increase in the use of moral statements and promises in the advertising after that amendment in 1870, when lending accelerated. So they picked up their morality advertising. That is government, people. With no equity on the balance sheet and a majority of loans with a non-performing status, the bank was insolvent by 1873. And that's when they coerced, well, they tricked Frederick Douglass into coming over and taking control of the bank. But guess what? To do so, they required he make an initial deposit of $10,000. And so he did, and then he realized, as he said later publicly, "I am married to a corpse." They tricked him into coming in, so that the blame for the failure of the bank would be on a black man and not the people. And folks, when you look at this, when you go back and look at this, you will find that not one of these people, not one of them, was ever prosecuted for anything they did with this, what in today's world would be $100 million. So, and how is that, you know, and of course, you know, the NAACP never mentions this. Why not? Because the NAACP wasn't founded by white people. It was founded by Jews. No black person had any authority whatsoever in the NAACP for decades. It was all run by the Jewish elite. And then they started using the NAACP for their own ends. And one of the first officials was none other than W.E.B. Du Bois. And I think it was remiss of him never to mention in any respect whatsoever this Freedmen's Bank, which went bust with all of these people's money. So, folks, I'm puzzled here. How many times can the government continue to do this stuff and we don't wake up? How many times are we going to be stomped on? Before we realize, no matter the wonderful feelings, how bubbly you get, how many wet dreams you have thinking about how wonderful this government is, it has never changed, not from the beginning. From 1781, 1785, when they were robbing and stealing money, and then they wrote a constitution so you would have to pay it back, or the people would have to pay it back. We, the people, would have to pay that money back. Ah, here comes that last rebel. We'll see you on the other side, folks.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.